Qiyam. When a person stands, then he adopts a way of respect. When a slave stands in front of his master, he always stands with his hands folded. Malfuzat. The salat taught by Islam is only its reflection. The standing of the spirit signifies that it shows readiness to suffer every hardship and to obey every command for the sake of God. Lecture Sialkot. When a person stands to praise and glorify God, this posture is known as Qiyam, or the standing position. Now, everyone knows that the standing position is the physical state best suited for praise and glorification. After all, when eulogies are recited before kings, they are done so while standing. And so, in the prayer, the apparent posture prescribed is the standing position, while the tongue is instructed to praise and glorify God in this state. The purpose in this is so that man stands before Allah the Exalted, in the spiritual sense as well. Praise is expressed by standing firm on one point. A person who truthfully and sincerely praises someone stands firm on one view. Therefore, an individual who says, "All praise belongs to Allah," can only sincerely proclaim these words when they develop a firm belief in the fact that Allah Almighty is the possessor of all forms of praise in totality. When a person accepts this fact with complete open-heartedness, this is known as qiyam, or standing, in the spiritual sense, because the heart begins to stand firm in this belief, as though it were upright, so to speak. Therefore, in the prayer, a person stands demonstrating an apparent state, so that they may be blessed with the ability to stand in the spiritual sense. Malfuzat. Man is required to stand in the presence of God Almighty, and standing is also from among the etiquettes of servants. Malfuzat. The prayer starts with Takbir-e-Tahrima. The Imam raises both hands to the level of his earlobes and says, "Allahu Akbar, God is the greatest." After raising his hands to the lobes of his ears and reciting Allahu Akbar, the Imam lowers his hands and folds them on his chest so that the right arm is over his left arm. Allahu Akbar. Allah is the greatest. Greatest is a comparison. The word greatest has to bring to our mind the other things that it is being compared to. For example, the statement Allah is great does not necessitate a comparison. In the statement Allah is great, the greatness of Allah can be expressed in and of itself. However, in the statement Allah is the greatest, the greatness of Allah is expressed in direct comparison to all other things. When we stand before Allah, presenting ourselves to Him, but our mind is thinking about someone else, then in that moment, that someone is greater to us than Allah. Hazrat Muslim Maud RaZiAllahu Anhu said, "When Allahu Akbar is called, he is warned, 'Stand with full attention, because the one in whose presence you are standing is the greatest.'" End quote. Saying, "Allah is the greatest, Allahu Akbar," seems like a statement of the obvious, but in practical application it is not. Often we actually believe others are greater than Allah. For example, when we stand before Allah Almighty in Salat, sometimes our mind is lost in thinking about someone else. We came to Salat with the purpose of reflecting on the beauties of Allah, but in reality, we find someone else's beauty more worthy of attracting our attention than Allah Almighty. When we say Allah is the greatest, Allahu Akbar, it's not because we need a reminder of a concept, it's because we need a reminder of a reality. When we say Allah is the greatest, Allahu Akbar, we should think of what in our mind is competing with Allah for greatness. What is so attractive about that distraction, and what is the cause of our boredom in Salat? The statement of Allah is the greatest, Allahu Akbar, is a comparison and application. When we say it, we should remind ourselves that the distraction which seems more attractive than Allah is not greater. Rather, Allah is the greatest. The repetition of Allah is the greatest, Allahu Akbar, allows us to break up Salat into segments where we renew our resolve that Allah is greater than anything else on our mind. Hazrat Muslim Maud RaZiAllahu Anhu said, "A useful technique for them is to concentrate on one posture at a time. When they stand for Qiyam, they should resolve not to let any thoughts disturb them up to the end of Ruku. Going into Ruku, they should make the same resolution for the time up to the end of Ruku. They should do the same at every change of posture. This will give them great strength to overpower any distracting thoughts." End quote. At each change of posture, we can ask ourselves, what in that segment of Salat competed with Allah Almighty in our mind for greatness? Then we can renew our resolve with a reminder that it is Allah, in fact, who is the greatest. Raising our hands symbolizes leaving everything behind. Body language is a universal human language. When we feel happy, the muscles in our face involuntarily express that happiness with a smile. We cannot resist it. Similarly, the muscles of our face are involuntarily tied to our emotions of fear or anger or sadness, etc. Our emotions are tied directly to specific facial expressions, and this language of the face is universal across cultures and centuries. This relationship between our emotions and our face is not one way, rather it goes both ways. The Promised Messiah alayhi salam said, "If you do not know how to weep, then make a weeping face, and ultimately tears will follow themselves." End quote. Similarly, if we force ourselves to smile for long enough, a feeling of happiness will start to rise within us. Our emotions and our facial expressions are inseparable. The rest of our body is also linked to our thoughts and emotions. This language of the body is so universal that we can even understand it in animals. We can immediately see if a dog is feeling vulnerable and afraid, or when it is feeling strong and aggressive. Similarly, we project confidence in our stance when we feel strong. This relationship between our emotions and our body also goes both ways. If someone is feeling vulnerable, he feels like protecting his body and closing up. But if he forces himself as an exercise to hold a spread posture that projects strength, then he will slowly start to feel more confident. Some expressions of body language are more obvious, others are more subtle, but there is a universal language behind it. Some cultures are more conscious and expressive of body language than others. For example, among European cultures, Italians are more expressive with their body when they speak. Whether our culture is more expressive or not, we are all familiar with the more obvious expressions of body language, and we have an intuitive understanding of the more subtle expressions as well. Salat is a conversation between a worshipper and his creator. The meanings of salat are not just conveyed through words, but also through the universal language of the body. The Promised Messiah alayhi salam said, "God Almighty has kept a reciprocal connection between the soul and the body, and the body affects the soul. For example, if a person tries to cry as a formality, after all, he does start crying. Similarly, a person who tries to laugh as a formality eventually starts laughing. Similarly, the conditions that come upon the body in salat, like standing and prostrating, also affect the soul. The extent to which he shows humility in his body is the extent to which it is created in the soul. Although God does not accept prostrations alone, but prostration has a connection with the soul. That is why the last station in salat is prostration. When a person reaches the furthest station of humility, at that time, all he wants is to go into prostration. This condition is witnessed even in animals. When dogs love their master, they come and place their head on his feet and they express their connection of love with prostration. From this, we clearly find that the body has a special connection with the soul. Similarly, the effect of the conditions of the soul become visible on the body. When the soul is sorrowful, its effects become apparent on the body as well, and tears and dejection become visible. If the soul and body do not have a reciprocal relationship, then why does this happen? The physical and spiritual lines run parallel. When humility is created in the soul, it is also created in the body. When humility is truly in the soul, then its effects automatically become visible in the body. Similarly, when the body is affected, the soul is also affected. That is why it is essential that when one stands before God Almighty in salat, he should express humility and devotion with his being. Although at that time it is a type of hypocrisy, but slowly its effect becomes permanent, and that devotion and humility is truly created in the soul. End quote. Each posture in salat conveys a certain sentiment and is a two-way street. In one way, each posture is an expression of the emotion that we are feeling. In another way, each posture helps to create the emotion that we wish to feel. For example, the posture of sajda can be an expression of the sentiments of humility we are feeling, or it can help create the sentiments of humility that we want to feel but are not feeling. When we raise our hands at the beginning of salat, it carries the symbolism of leaving everything behind and turning to Allah Almighty. Hazrat Muslim Audh Raziallahu Anhu said that when a believer raises his hands before prayer, he removes all other thoughts and becomes engrossed in thoughts of worshipping God. Aside from maintaining our attention, another wisdom in raising our hands in this way is that this gesture is a natural expression that is used for leaving everything else behind. With this gesture, a Muslim expresses that he has separated himself from all thoughts and work of the world and has turned his attention to his Lord. In a couplet, the poet Ghalib indicates to this movement of our hands. The courtiers place their hands on their ears as they greet, by which they mean that they are not acquainted. Thus, by this movement, a believer expresses that he cuts himself off from the entire world and has turned his attention towards his Lord. End quote. When we raise our hands to begin Salat, we should consciously express with our body the sentiment of leaving everything behind, of turning our attention away from the world. Combining this gesture with the statement of Allahu Akbar, Allah is the greatest, creates a complete intention. We leave everything that is insignificant behind with our gesture, and we move forward towards the one who is greatest with our words. When our body, our words, and our heart come together to turn our attention away from the world and towards Allah, then we begin Salat with a solid niyyah, determination of the mind. Niyyah. Expressing niyyah in the following words is optional. We can say Allahu Akbar and express our niyyah in these words if we like, or we can say Allahu Akbar and begin our Salat with the Sana'a. وَجَّهْتُ وَجْهِيَ لِلَّذِي فَطَرَ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضَ خَنِيفًا وَمَا أَنَا مِنَ الْمُشْرِكِينَ I have turned my face towards him who created the heavens and the earth, being ever inclined to God, and I am not of those who associate gods with God. وَجَّهْتُ وَجْهِيَ I have turned my full attention. When reciting these words, we should ask ourselves what we are turning our attention away from. Because we cannot turn our attention towards something without turning our attention away from something else. What was our mind occupied in before Salat? It is the thoughts of that work or that conversation that are most likely to pick up from where they left off as soon as our mind wanders in Salat. What thoughts does our mind generally wander into when we get distracted in Salat? Being aware of our daydreams is an important self-analysis. Here, we preemptively make up our minds to turn our attention away from them. The words, I have turned my full attention, وَجَّهْتُ وَجْهِيَ, make us aware of what we need to be turning our attention away from. This same point is also found in the word Hanifa, which means one who turns his attention away from one thing and inclines towards something else. In the words, I have turned my full attention, وَجَّهْتُ وَجْهِيَ, the emphasis is on our mind turning to Allah. Whereas in the words, being ever inclined, Hanifa, the emphasis is on our heart turning towards Allah. The same sentiment is expressed when we raise our hands at the beginning of Salat. Whether we choose to verbalize our niyyah with this verse of the Holy Quran or not, when we raise our hands for prayer, we say with our body language that we turn our attention away from everything else. Lillazi fatara, towards him who created. Ibn Abbas says that he did not know the meaning of Fatir al-Samawat until two Arabs of the desert came to him disputing respecting the mastery of a well, and one of them said, Ana fatartuha, I originated or began it. The words khalaqa and fatara are used in the Holy Quran to refer to creation. The distinction of the word fatara is its emphasis on creating from nothing. When we recite the words towards him who has created, lillazi fatara, the thought of something being created from nothing should cause us some disorientation. Our mind can comprehend the concept of creating from something, but the idea of creating from nothing is inherently beyond our comprehension. The more we try to visualize the attribute of creating from nothing, the more frustrating it is. We cannot relate to it. When we recite the attribute of the merciful, Ar-Rahim, then our mind can immediately relate to how people can be merciful to others. We can easily visualize this attribute. With the attribute of Lord, Rabb, the Gracious, Ar-Rahman, Master of the Day of Judgment, Maliki Yawmiddin, each can easily be processed in our mind and visualized. However, when we recite Him who has created, Allazi Fatara, our mind hits a roadblock. How can anything be created from nothing? It doesn't seem to make sense, but we cannot dismiss it because logically we know that there should be a cause of all causes. We know that in this finite world, the chain of cause and effect has to start somewhere. The beauty of the words, Him who has created, Allazi fatara, is how disorienting they are. We cannot recite them with just our minds. We have to recite these words with a heart that is filled with an awe of our incomprehensible God. Only with that awe in our hearts can we enjoy reciting these words. Salat is an experience of the heart. it begins with an exercise in humility. This same attribute of Him who has created, Allazi Fatara, reassures us that no matter how weak we are, Allah Almighty has the power to accept our prayers. The promised Messiah alayhi salam said, "Your God is one who has suspended numberless stars without any support, and who has created heaven and earth from nothing. Then would you think so ill of Him as to imagine that your objective is beyond His power?" End quote. When our heart is moved by the awe of how incomprehensible Him who has created, Allazi Fatara, is, the prayers we offer after will be filled with a hope that was not there before. The purpose of Salat is to move the heart, for us to reach out to our Creator from the depths of our heart. If the words, "towards Him who has created, Lillazi Fatara," succeeds in moving our heart, then the frame of mind needed for prayer is created. As-samawati wal-ard, the heavens and the earth. Grandeur of the Creator. At times, Allah Almighty is described in the Holy Quran as the Creator of everything, at other times as the Creator of all creatures, and at other times as the Creator of mankind. Each description evokes a different visualization and a different emotion. The most personalized way to describe the attribute of the Creator is on the individual level. For example, the Holy Quran says, "Why should I not worship Him who has created me?" Chapter 36, verse 23. When we recite this verse and apply it to ourselves, it evokes a personal and individual relationship we have with our Creator. For someone to know that Allah is his individual Creator is sufficient reason for him to worship Allah. However, the words used at the beginning of Salat introduce us to Allah Almighty in a broader sense that is filled with grandeur. If we had said, "I turn my attention to Him who has created me," it would have been personal, but it would have been a very narrow description of the attribute of the Creator. If we had said, "I turn my attention to Him who has created everything," it would have been an encompassing description of the attribute of the Creator, but it would not have carried the same grandeur that comes with the words, "the heavens and the earth." When we recite the words, "the heavens and the earth," as-samawati wal-ard, the vastness of the galaxies that Allah Almighty created comes to mind, and our insignificance as just one tiny creation and all of it evokes a unique feeling of smallness. The greatness of Allah as the Creator is expressed here not only in concept, but in a way that inspires awe. Link between all of creation and its Creator. With the words, "the heavens and the earth," as-samawati wal-ard, everything that exists that could distract us away from Allah is connected back to Allah Almighty. In fact, all of creation is there to remind us of its Creator. Explaining how insight is needed to see the Creator in the creation, Hazrat Muslim Maud radiallahu anhu said, "In reality, knowledge of the being of God is an encompassing knowledge and comes after knowledge and understanding of other things. Some things are visible in themselves, and by seeing them we become aware of them. For example, if we put our finger in front of an infant, he will just think that an object has come in front of him. He isn't aware that the finger is connected to a hand, and that hand is connected to an arm, and that arm is connected to a shoulder. That shoulder is connected to a head through a neck, and in that head is a mind. And that mind instructed all of these things to come into motion, after which this finger appeared in front of him." End quote. When we play with an infant, he sees our face and smiles because he recognizes us. Then, if we give him our finger to play with, he gets distracted from us and starts playing with our finger. He doesn't yet have the understanding that we are connected with our finger, that when he is playing with our finger, he is playing with us. Similarly, when we are unable to make the connection between the world and its Creator, then the world distracts us away from our Creator rather than reminding us of Him. As an infant gets a little older and develops the motor skills to understand how his hands are connected to his mind, then he starts to understand how our hand is also connected with our mind. Then, when he sees our finger, he recognizes it, and he looks for our face. When he finds our face, then he smiles and recognizes us, and then plays with our finger. He connects the two. Now when he plays with our finger, it doesn't turn his attention away from us. It turns his attention towards us. He plays with our finger knowing that he's playing with us. Our finger reminds him of us. It no longer distracts him away from us. In our spiritual infancy, we also have to gradually develop the insight to connect the creation with the Creator. When we recite that Allah Almighty is the Creator of the heavens and the earth, as-samawati wal-ard, everything in existence we can think of reminds us of its Creator. Anything that can be distracting us from Allah is ultimately connected to Allah. The very things we worry about and that distract us from Salat makes us more focused in our Salat. This realization harnesses those distractions into even more powerful prayers. Rather than fighting a battle against our distractions, this teaches us to work with our distractions to make our Salat more focused. Repetition of this exercise in our daily prayers makes it more intuitive. Eventually, what was a distraction from Allah Almighty starts to become a reminder of Allah Almighty. The Holy Prophet ﷺ said, "There is none among you with whom there is not an attaché from among the jinn," as in a devil. The companion said, "Allah's Messenger, with you too?" Thereupon he said, "Yes, but Allah helps me against him, so I am safe from his hand and he does not command me but for good." Sahih Muslim. Explaining this hadith, Hazrat Muslim Maud radiallahu anhu said, "There is a general influence that Satan has on all people, and no one is safe from it." The Holy Prophet ﷺ said that when such an influence reaches me, it changes into righteousness. Thus, even satanic influences can be used for righteousness. End quote. For example, imagine our mind wanders during Salat into thinking about what we need to put on our list for groceries we're going to get. There is nothing wrong with thinking about groceries, but when the thought distracts us from Salat, then it becomes wrong in that time and place. We can instead take that thought and be grateful during Salat to Allah the Provider, who has provided us with food. Our children never worry about how groceries get to the table. They take it for granted because they never think about the chain of events that ends with food appearing on their plate. Similarly, we may never think about the long chain of events that starts with Allah Almighty and ends with groceries appearing on our local store shelves. We don't think about how fragile that chain is and how we could face food shortages if it is disrupted. Taking a distraction in Salat and making it into a reminder of gratitude is how a satanic influence can be used for righteousness. Thus, when we know that Allah is the Creator, then everything in the heavens and the earth, as-samawati wal-arth, becomes a reminder of Him. When we see a painting, we think of the painter. When we receive a gift, we think of the sender. The gift does not distract us from the sender. It reminds us of him. Hazrat Abdul Qadir Jilani said, "The allotter is Allah, and the executor is Allah, and the creator is Allah, so he is more deserving of thanks than others. For example, one does not look towards the slave who carries a present, but towards the master, the sender of the gift. Whoever looks to the outside and the cause, and his knowledge does not go beyond these, is ignorant and defective in his intelligence." The term intelligent applies to a person on account of his insight into the ultimate end of things. End quote. Khanifa, being ever inclined. The promised Messiah alayhi salam said, "The very essence of Islam is that all of one's faculties, whether inner or external, must always lay prostrate at the threshold of Allah Almighty, just as a large engine fuels many other parts. In the same way, until a person's every action and movement is not made to follow the overall power and control of the engine, how can they believe in the divinity of Allah Almighty? Until this is so, can such an individual call themselves one who is ever inclined to God? In the true sense, when reciting the words, 'I have turned my face towards Him who has created the heavens and the earth,' if a person reinforces their words through action and turns towards God, then undoubtedly such a one is a Muslim, they are a believer, and Hanif, one who is ever inclined to God." End quote. In the words, "I have turned my full attention," wajjahtu wajhiya, the emphasis is on turning our attention towards Allah. In the word Hanifa, being ever inclined, the emphasis is on turning our hearts towards Allah. Turning our attention to someone simply requires control of our thoughts. We can change our thoughts much more easily than we can change our hearts. If we fall in love with someone, then nobody can change the way we feel. Even we can't change it. There is something in their beauty that has infatuated us. We can easily change our thoughts and focus our mind on something, but we cannot change our hearts. If someone is forced to marry someone they don't want to marry, they can't force themselves to fall in love with that person. We can force our mind to focus on something, but we cannot force our heart to love someone we don't. If our heart is inclined away from Allah, then we will find no pleasure in Salat. We will force our thoughts towards Allah, but the flow of our hearts in the opposite direction will pull our minds back. If our hearts are inclined to Allah Almighty, then our minds will automatically join the flow of our hearts. There is naturally a pleasure in turning towards the one we are in love with, and we will effortlessly find pleasure in salat. Even the weakest among us have experienced at least one salat in our lives where we felt a pleasure in the remembrance of Allah that did not require any effort on our part. When we recite the word Hanifa, being ever inclined, our goal should be to make that experience a regular part of our lives. Continuing, the promised Messiah alayhi salam said, "Another cause which gives rise to the habit of abandoning prayer and becoming indolent is that when an individual inclines towards that which is besides Allah, the faculties of the soul and heart forever remain bent in that direction in the manner of a tree, whose branches are bent in a certain direction and then left to grow in that shape. The hearts of such people become so rough and hard that they solidify like a rock in the very manner of the branches I have just described. After they harden, they cannot be bent in any other direction. So too is the case with a person's heart and soul, which continue to move further away from God with every passing day. Therefore, to forsake Allah Almighty and ask of another is a very dangerous thing and makes the heart tremble. This is why it is absolutely necessary to regularly observe the prayer, so that first and foremost, it becomes a deep-rooted habit and a person becomes inclined to turn towards Allah. Then, gradually, a time comes when one attains to a state in which they become completely detached from all other relations to the exclusion of Allah, and in this state, they become the recipient of divine light and derive pleasure in prayer." End quote. If our heart is not inclined to Allah, then it will incline to the world. The more years we spend in materialistic desires, the more we become irreversibly inclined to the world. Every day spent neglecting our purpose is a day we move further away from it. Knowing this should create a sense of urgency in us. Some people say that they will start observing salat when they are more mature. They think spirituality is only for when you're older. They don't realize that every day they spend inclining away from Allah Almighty, their inclination towards the world becomes reinforced. Their abstract ideals will not decide who they will be when they are older. It will be the reality of what they did every day up until that time that will decide who they will be. We should imagine our inclinations as branches of a tree that grow each day in the direction of the light we shine on them. When we shine light from one direction, its branches will grow crooked. After decades of growing a tree like this, if we try to bend it in a different direction, we will break it before we straighten it. Similarly, a habit that we spend decades reinforcing can only be changed with decades of work, except if Allah's special mercy saves us. If we think we will change when we get older, we are setting ourselves up for a rude awakening. The only way to counter a daily inclination towards the world is with a daily commitment to detaching ourselves from the world. Salat is an exercise in completely leaving the world behind as if it is nothing. There is a euphoric feeling of pleasure in the freedom of full detachment from the world during salat. However, an occasional pleasure and a passing inclination towards Allah does not make a person hanif, ever inclined. If we are mildly interested in someone, no one would ever say we are in love with them. When our heart is ever inclined to someone, our thoughts and actions are motivated by that love as well. Hanif means true pleasure in obedience of Allah and steadfastness therein. It does not just mean that an inclination towards goodness is found in him. Rather, it is also necessary that he be established on goodness and the quality of consistency is found in him. The only way to become hanif, ever inclined, is through a commitment to the habit of daily salat. Then the inclinations of our heart will grow in the direction of the love of Allah, and our mind and actions will automatically follow. In almost every instance where the word hanif is used in the Holy Quran, it is immediately followed by an absolvement from those who are idolaters, mushrik. وَمَا أَنَا مِنَ الْمُشْرِكِينَ And I am not among those who associate partners with Allah. In the verses leading up to this verse of the Holy Quran, which is the niyyah of salat, Hazrat Ibrahim alayhi salam explains to his people the different stages of leaving idolatry. The idolatry mentioned in these verses does not just refer to physical idols. The promised Messiah alayhi salam said, "Remember, there are many types of idolatry, of which one is called apparent idolatry, and another hidden idolatry. The general example of apparent idolatry is how idolatrous people consider idols, trees, or other things as objects of worship. Hidden idolatry is that a man glorifies a thing just as he does or should do to Allah, or that he loves a thing as Allah should be loved, or that he fears it or places his trust in it. End quote. The lessons in the story of Hazrat Ibrahim alayhi salam are relevant to us as well. First, when the stars set, he explained the first stage and said, "I like not those that disappear," chapter 6, verse 77. This is the stage of disappointment in idolatry. Then when the moon set, he explained the next stage and said, "Unless my Lord guides me, I will surely be among the people gone astray," chapter 6, verse 78. This is the stage of desperation in idolatry. Then when the sun set, he explained the next stage and said, "O my people, indeed I am free from what you associate with Allah," chapter 6, verse 79. This is the stage of disgust with idolatry. In the end, he said the words we say in Niyyah, and ended with, "I am not among those who associate partners with Allah," chapter 6, verse 80. This is the stage where we not only absolve ourselves of the action of idolatry, but we absolve ourselves of the people who commit idolatry. The starting point of Salat is the ending point of idolatry. The stages in these verses describe the process of how we leave hidden idolatry. Past commentators on the Holy Quran have taken the story of Hazrat Ibrahim alayhi salam literally and mistakenly believed that he committed idolatry. Hazrat Muslim Maud radiallahu anhu said, "The literal interpretation of these events by commentators is incorrect. However, commentators have correctly concluded that when the human mind gains guidance without revelation, it goes from low to high. According to a child, in the beginning his mother is everything. In other words, she is his god. Rather, he is not even aware of his mother. He considers her breast to be his god because he knows that this is where he receives milk. If he does not find her breast, then he cries. Then he recognizes his mother, so he loves her. Then he recognizes his father, so he loves him. Then he loves his brothers. Then he loves the children he plays with. He loves his neighbors. Then he starts to love other needs like food and drink and clothes. At each stage, he considers each of these to be his purpose. However, slowly he leaves all of these until these things lead him to God." End quote. Disappointment. The first stage of leaving idolatry starts with disappointment. What makes us distinct in the animal kingdom is that we are spiritual beings. Because of this spiritual nature, whenever we search for satisfaction in material pleasures, we ultimately feel disappointed. We share our capacity for material pursuits with animals as well, and animal pursuits can never truly satisfy us. We may think that loving and sacrificing for our fellow man is a noble and unique trait, but even in animals, the love mothers have for their children puts some humans to shame. Hens will stand in front of predators and sacrifice their lives to protect their chicks. The accumulation of wealth for status is not a concept foreign to animals either. Some species of birds attract mates based on the beauty of the nest they build. In most of our basic behaviors, we are no different than animals. The only thing that makes us distinct in principle is our capacity for spirituality. As humans, we look for purpose in one material thing after another, until we have no choice but to come to terms with our distinct spiritual nature. Our spiritual nature is what makes us distinct from animals, and as long as we live our lives like animals, we can never find true happiness. For us to devote our lives to worldly pursuits is like a human devoting all of his time to animal pursuits. It is like an adult devoting all of his time to childish diversions. For example, an infant can be pacified by dangling keys in front of his face, and he cries when it is taken away. But when he grows into a teenager, he can only be pacified by having a new car to go with those keys. As a teenager, he becomes obsessed with cars, but then he slowly grows out of it. As a man, his obsession changes to women, and that is what he devotes his time and energy to. The value of a nice car becomes its value in courtship. As he grows old, he loses interest in lust, and his new obsession is his position in society. The only value a car has to him now is as a status symbol. Hazrat Muslim Maud radiallahu anhu said, "One by one, these things come in front of him, and about each he estimates that he cannot live without it, as if it is his God. If a six-month-old child could speak and understand, and he was told that when he grows up, he will leave his mother's lap and that his attachment to his mother will decrease, he would be shocked. If a seven-year-old were told that when he grows up, he will marry a woman and his attachment will be more to her, and he will leave his mother, then he will say, 'I'm not insane. I wouldn't leave my mother. Other people would do this, I will never do this.' Thus, It is a part of nature that at different times man is inclined to different things. When he is inclined to each of those things, he cannot imagine that he will one day leave it. When he gets older, he never thinks that at one time he was inclined to those things, and he considered his life empty without them." End quote. Each time we grow out of an obsession, looking back, it seems like nothing more than child's play. But we are so short-sighted that we don't realize that our current obsession is no different. That is why Allah Almighty has described the life of this world as child's play. The Holy Quran says, "Keep in mind that the life of this world is only sport and pastime, and a display, and a subject of boasting among yourselves, and rivalry in multiplying riches and children." Chapter 57, verse 21. Whatever it is that we presently feel like we cannot live without, after a while, we will become hopelessly bored with it, and we will need something more meaningful. No matter how real it feels, that reality disappears. With each disappointment, our heart says, "I like not those that disappear." Chapter 6, verse 77. Our heart feels the sentiments with which Hazrat Ibrahim alayhi salam described the first stage. Desperation. As we start to recognize this pattern in our lives, those feelings of disappointment change to feelings of desperation. Desperation comes when we have a midlife crisis. It comes when we realize that the disappointments in our lives have wasted time we can never have back. For example, a person thinks he'll be happy when he achieves his career goals. After years of schooling and climbing the ladder, when he finally reaches the position he aspired to, he realizes it doesn't give him the happiness that he was looking for. His coworkers aren't as happy with their positions as he thought they would be. He realizes he spent half his life trying to get something that isn't enough, something he doesn't really want anymore. When he finally achieves his ambitions, he finds the void is still there, only greater than before. The Holy Prophet ﷺ said, "If Adam's son had a valley full of gold, he would like to have two valleys, for nothing fills his mouth except dust." Sahih Bukhari. We all have to face an existential and midlife crisis at some point or another. When we realize that life is passing us by, we start to feel desperation. We have no choice but to look beyond the physical and search for a purpose in the spiritual. Hazrat Abdul Qadir Jilani said, "So long as he finds resources in his own self, he does not turn towards the people. And so long as he finds resources in the people, he does not turn towards the Creator." End quote. As we turn away from the world in disappointment and search for our Creator, our helplessness brings feelings of desperation, and our heart says, "Unless my Lord guides me, I will surely be among the people gone astray." Chapter 6, verse 78. Our heart feels the sentiments with which Hazrat Ibrahim alayhi salam described the second stage. Disgust. Desperation on its own is not enough to reach the stage of disgust with idolatry. For this stage, we have to have experienced heartbreak. For example, falling in love means making ourselves vulnerable. When a person falls in love with someone and builds their future around them, they make themselves vulnerable. If their spouse suddenly dies, their sense of security is shattered. For some time, they become incapable of vulnerability. To imagine falling in love during that time of heartbreak is inconceivable. If anything, it is repulsive. To suggest to them during this time that they fall in love with someone is offensive. This is a period of heartbreak. What we avoid thinking about is that every single person we have attached happiness to and built our future around is going to disappear from this world. Either they will leave first or we will leave everything behind. We have no control over whether it will happen today or not, but we will have to face that heartbreak and it will turn our existence upside down. Disappointment threatens our sense of security, but it does not break it. Desperation shakes our sense of security, but it is not enough to break it. It is only heartbreak that bursts the security bubble that we were so sure we were safe in. Our heart is broken by the loss of what we thought belonged to us. When our world is shattered, that is the moment of grief when nobody in this world can make the pain go away. That is the moment of vulnerability, when the thought of turning back to trusting the world is inconceivable. That is the moment of clarity, when we see that no attachment in this world is lasting. We see that any attachment to anything is a time bomb that could shatter our world again. The only worldly attachments that are a source of peace are the ones that we connect to our attachment with Allah Almighty. It is in that moment of disgust that our heart says, "O my people, indeed I am free from what you associate with Allah." Chapter 6, verse 79. Our heart feels the sentiments with which Hazrat Ibrahim alayhi salam described the third stage. Purifying our environment. The stage after this is where we not only absolve ourselves of the action of idolatry, we also absolve ourselves of the people who commit idolatry. When we try to leave a habit, we rid ourselves more easily of the harmful action than the harmful company that we keep. An alcoholic will have a hard time leaving alcohol, but he will have an even harder time leaving all of the friends he gets together to drink with. When we abandon the harmful action, we purify only our internal condition. But when we abandon the harmful company, we purify our external condition as well. When we say, "I am not among those who associate partners with Allah," chapter 6, verse 80, we say that our affinity is only with those who love Allah. We say that our love for Allah is so great that we only have close love with those who love Allah. "I am not among those who associate partners with Allah" is a strongly worded statement. It is not something that can be said passively. There is a forceful sentiment underlying it. When we recite it, we should remind ourselves of that heart-sinking feeling when our sense of security and attachment to this world was suddenly shattered. Then, with a feeling of disgust for idolatry, the words flow along with our heart, "I am not among those who associate partners with Allah." The more we refresh this epiphany, the more our capacity to experience materialistic pleasures dies away on its own. Heartbreak is a temporary feeling, and when it fades, our heart inclines back to worldly attachments. This feeling has to be refreshed again and again in our salat. Then, our moment of clarity will start to become a life of clarity. We slowly find our hearts turning away from idolatry, as in shirk, and becoming ever inclined to Allah. Why does niyas not start with the words inni? The verse of the Holy Quran that we say in